Hello and welcome to Manx Radio, where you're listening to our general election candidate interview series. I'm our election producer, Amy Griffiths, and on Thursday the 24th of September, you'll get to have your say on who should make up the next administration on the Isle of Man. We've invited all the candidates to take part in a 30-minute interview to help you get to know them better. Up next is Laurie Hooper, who's standing in Ramsey. He's been speaking to Alex Brindley.
Today I'm talking to Laurie Hooper, who's seeking re-election in the constituency of Ramsey. He was first elected to the House of Keys as an MHK in September 2016 and re-elected in September 2021. So first of all, Mr. Hooper, I have to ask, what's improved for the constituents of Ramsey over the last 5 years thanks to your role?
It's a really good question, actually. And when you look at the role of an MHK, there's often a difficult balance between working in the national interest and trying to focus on things that specifically benefit your constituents. And so the two often, I find, work quite well together, because if you're lifting the whole island up, obviously you're going to be lifting up your own constituency. From a Ramsey perspective, I think actually the town's come a long way, and whilst I'd love to sit here and take credit for a lot of that, actually I can't, because it really is the community, the local businesses, the local firms, that's where a lot of the drivers come from. And actually I think that's probably the right thing. Actually, you don't really need government micromanaging people's lives to the extent where everything good that happens has to come from something that government has done. I mean, one of the things that I think government does need to focus on a bit more is some of that local service, local community development around the access to government services. That's where I think we can add value. And from my perspective over the last few years, one of the things that happened during my time in health for Ramsey specifically was the issuing of a new pharmacy licence. So one of the things that I was keen on for quite a while, as you know, Ramsey had a number of pharmacies, but they were all the same brand, and that didn't really give anybody a lot of choice. So if you needed to get something that wasn't available in the one branded pharmacy, you didn't really have anywhere else to go. Now, of course, we have an independent pharmacy as well in town. And I think that competition, that element of competition, is quite healthy for even for a small market like Ramsey or the north of the island. So that's one very specific kind of local measure that kicked in. But actually the work that you do as an MHK very rarely is focused on those very local issues, and I think that's a difficult balance for us to strike. Mostly your work as an MHK is focused on national issues. So I spent the first few years of the administration as Minister of Health and Social Care, so my focus quite naturally would have been on the health service. And I think what we saw over those first 3 years was trying to create an element of stability in the health service, a bit of consistency, a bit of continuity, and starting to deliver improvements where they could be felt on the ground. So one of the big initiatives that I rolled out, I think, in the second year of being in health was what's called the Restoration and Recovery Initiative. And that was an initiative to fund, I think it was 3,000 operations for people on the Isle of Man. That obviously impacted a lot of people in a very positive way, had a really meaningful impact on waiting lists at the time, and it was something that I think only happened through the concerted effort of a lot of different people throughout the Department of Health and Manx Care. And again, it's quite very specific, very kind of actionable. That's something that happened that I can happily put my name to. But the reality, again, is as a politician, I'd like to be able to take credit for all of that. But you just can't, and I don't think you should. I think actually a lot of the work that's done, it goes unrewarded and unrecognised. And that work isn't done by politicians, by ministers. It's done by hardworking staff on the ground. And really, I think it's them that should take the credit for a lot of the successes that we've had over the last few years.
In terms, though, of Ramsey, and let's stay with health for a moment. You mentioned there that... the one thing that the Parliament and the administration in particular over the last 5 years gets criticised for is a lot of talk, not much action. Yeah. And let's deal with health in Ramsey for a start. Come or more, that it's an old people's home. And if we're being completely blunt about it, old people are dying in homes, naturally, for at end of life, in conditions that are considered unacceptable. No ensuite rooms. And you've been Minister of Health. Where is the replacement? Where is the progress?
So when I took over the office, we had planning permission already for a new home, a home that had been designed sort of in collaboration with staff, with families, and actually that was where we were going. Very early doors, I thought that's easy, right? Getting this over the line, it's going to be nice and straightforward. We've got planning permission, we know what we need, we know what we want, let's go ahead and do it. And then the Treasury get involved, and that's where everything seems to go off a cliff. And I've got real issues with a lot of the way the capital programme has been dealt with over the last few years, and there's actually been a report released only in the last day or so talking about the issues that the island is facing because government has not had a proper capital programme and doesn't have one.
Well, your joint MHK for Ramsey, and Dr Alex Allenson, was at the time the Treasury Minister. Surely, the two of you, we expect you in the national interest as the public to go and say, sort this out, because this is something about people's lives.
Yeah, and I again, I can't really defend that. What I'm trying to do is explain how we got to where we're at. And ultimately, it was this constant kind of, are you sure that that's the right design? Are you sure that's the right location, even? We were told to go and reinvestigate alternative sites. And to think how crazy that is. We'd gone through the whole planning process to get planning permission to build a new facility on a particular piece of land, to be told by the Treasury, go and look at other bits of land. That's absolutely crazy.
Can I just clarify? When you say the Treasury, who's actually in charge and running the island? Is it the civil servants telling you this, or is it the politicians who are meant to be in charge?
Now, that is a very good question, because ultimately, I don't think you ever get an answer to that. So when I say we, I mean the Department of Health and Manx Care, and we were getting told by, it would have been Treasury's Sackett Committee, that's the capital committee in Treasury that deals with all of these issues. And so that's where this feedback comes from. It's, oh, you need to go back and double check this, and you need to go and get more information and resubmit business cases and all the rest of it. And it really is a very heavily bureaucratic process. And I suppose when I walked into the job even 10 years ago, I didn't fully appreciate just how damaging that process could be. And what we've seen over the last 5 years, and this is not specific to Ramsay and Common Moor is the one that probably annoys me by far the most, but we've also seen it with Castle Rushen High School, you've seen it with developments in Douglas on Park Road. Anywhere where you look at government's capital programme, you'll see actually something that should have happened a long time ago that hasn't happened because of this bureaucratic process, this red tape process. And the only people really that can answer the question, well, why hasn't that been sorted, are the people in the Treasury, the ministers in the Treasury, the politicians in the Treasury, because ultimately they're the ones that you'd think would have control over this process. But from the outside looking in, it doesn't feel like anybody has control over that process. We even heard last month in Tynwald around the horse trams, there was even a disagreement there between the current Treasury minister and the current DOI minister about who it was that was responsible for certain aspects of a business case. And you're sitting there in the room thinking, this cannot be that complicated.
So if people are going to vote for you at this election, what are you going to do about that situation in the next 5 years that, as you say, you find unacceptable?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, one of the things that we've already done, actually, is to start reforming the budget process. That happened in the last sitting of Tynwald, and actually that is a massive step forward to try and bring some of this stuff out into the open, into the public eye. But ultimately, I think, and I felt this for quite a while, and it's only really in the last couple of years where this has become solidified, I actually think that when you look at people talking about the size, the scope of government, the government being unable to make decisions, the speed of decision making, a lot of those issues do come back down to the amount of control and influence that the Treasury has over everybody else. And that's the problem that needs fixing, is we need to say, actually, your job is to protect the public purse. That's absolutely fine. Your job is not to get involved in policy decisions that sit inside other government departments. And I think that's the issue that needs fixing quite urgently. I think it's quite an easy fix. I think you just need politicians that are willing to say, thank you, Treasury, this is your job, back in your box. And I think that's what we haven't had.
In terms of health in Ramsay, just for one more minute, that in June, you suggested that Ramsay Cottage Hospital needed replacing.
Yeah.
Not mentioned at all during your time as Minister for Health, no work towards it. Is that not just electioneering?
It wasn't an issue that had come up, if I'm honest. So during my time in health, there was a lot of talk about improving the maintenance around the hospital. And that started to happen, you know, sorting out the weeds and the plant growth and that kind of thing. And that was where I understood the issues to be. That's where the feedback was, and this is where the problems were. When they had the issue that required the hospital to be temporarily closed and services moved out, at that point, the guys went in and started lifting up rocks, you know, opening up ceiling tiles and all the rest of it. And it was that piece of work that I think opened their eyes to how bad things actually were. And I think if they hadn't gone in and done that, we would never have known what the situation was in terms of the actual work that needed to be done. And so in some ways, this temporary closure and the issues that have led up to it, in some ways that's probably a good thing for us in Ramsay, because it has actually quite clearly opened our eyes to, okay, this isn't just a maintenance issue anymore. We can't maintain a way out of this. This needs real investment. And I think where we're at and looking at the numbers that have been disclosed and some of the other conversations that we've had around this, I'm now absolutely convinced that the right thing to do for Ramsay, for the North, and actually for the health service as a whole, because one of the things people don't seem to realise is how important the Cottage Hospital is to Nobles and to the whole health service on the island, is actually to look at reinvesting in a modern facility on the same location. I think there's definitely space up there to do that, to reinvest in it for the long term, to make a strategic decision that says, actually, we do need a second hospital on the island. We need somewhere where we can have overflow, where we can have backup, where we can provide a certain level of community service. And I think that location is fundamentally the right place for it. So, like I say, it's this work that kind of was done off the back of the issues they had that really lifted the lid on just the actual situation up there.
But in terms of finance, where you know, we still haven't got Cornwall Moor sorted. You're turning around in the run up to an election. Mm-hmm. I say again that that Ramsey Cottage Hospital needs replacing. That's a big price tag,
yeah.
And we know full well that, you know, up north there's two things that come out at elections which are normally vote winners: go against a marina and make sure you protect the hospital. Where's the money coming from for a new hospital?
So actually, that's quite an easy one to answer. If you look at the work that needs doing, the numbers between repairing what we have and building a new one, there's not much in that at all. And so the question you've got to ask is it worth spending long millions to extend the life of the existing facility, knowing that will still be inadequate, or spending probably just a little bit more and actually building something that is going to last another 50, 100 years? And that's the question. It's about value for money. Where does the money come from? The capital programme. The government has not spent any of the capital programme, any meaningful amount, over the last 5 years. There is enough money. And I am constantly frustrated by this narrative that says the Isle of Man does not have the money to invest. We absolutely do. We have the money to invest in our national infrastructure. We have the money to invest in assets. What we don't really have the money for is to fritter it away on overblown schemes that really aren't what the public need. But in terms of, is the money available to invest in our core assets? Absolutely it is. The government has been setting this money aside as part of the capital programme and not spending it. The money is categorically there. I'm absolutely convinced of this. And it isn't a choice. It isn't really, for me, a choice between do you spend this money or do you spend nothing. The question is, do you spend a lot of money fixing what you have, knowing it's still going to be inadequate, or do you spend a little bit more money but actually securing value out of that spend for the next 50 years?
Now, I want to move on to you as a candidate being put up for election and what people get to know about you. When you were Minister for Health, there was a widely publicised dispute with Braddon commissioners about their access to the new development, the Roundhouse. Now,
yes.
To many people on the outside, it seemed petty, especially when money was spent covering up one of their own direction signs with your department's own sign. It was up one day, it was covered up the next. Do we not have the right to expect from a minister, not just a national politician, but a minister, a calm roundtable discussion should have taken place to resolve the issue rather than a public shouting match which sounded childish and, from the public's point of view, they just wanted a really good facility?
So I think we had a number of roundtable discussions around that. It was Braddon commissioners that for some reason decided they wanted to bring everything into the public domain. That's their call, absolutely fine. But ultimately, as Minister for Health, you are Minister for Health. It is your job to spend the money that you have on nurses, on doctors, on healthcare facilities, not on roads for somebody else. And that's the core issue here is...
This road was existing already, wasn't it? It was already a publicly existing access road that accessed the Roundhouse as it was. We weren't being asked to build a new road.
Yes, there were. There was the need for a new road because ultimately what they had assumed as part of their planning was that they could access this facility through the hospital. Mm. And that was clearly never going to work. Manx Care were very clear on that from a risk perspective that wasn't acceptable.
Clarify why? Because it is a public road that is open around the hospital, which people use to access other services.
They do, but the issue there is if you're going to have the significantly increased traffic flow around that, then what you're going to end up with is people and... The complete irony of this is this actually happened to me whilst trying to access the hospital, ending up being stuck in traffic around there. Imagine an ambulance trying to get to the ambulance facility being stuck in traffic because people are trying to access an event. That was kind of one of the core issues. And so that we said to them, look, there's a bit of land to the left of the facility. We'll give you the land. You can have that to build your road on. That's not a problem. But they wanted the health service to also pay for that road. And actually, from my perspective, health didn't have the money to spend on roadworks for somebody else. That's the core of it. I mean, if it was a tiny amount of money, you probably would have gone, fair enough, crack on. But you were talking, you know, hundreds of thousands. I can't remember the exact number, but it wasn't a small amount of money. And ultimately, I couldn't imagine going back to Tim Walls and asking for a supplementary vote for the health service on the basis that the health service had chosen to fund infrastructure for the commissioners. I don't think Tim Walls would have backed that. I don't think that would have been the right thing to do. And ultimately, that's the job, right? The job is to say, I have money. Would you like me to spend this money on health services? Or would you like me to spend it on something that isn't anything to do with the health service? And I think the public would much rather that money be spent on health services, ultimately.
Now, generally, people have an opinion, once again, that the last 5 years has been an administration where not a huge amount has been done. And a huge amount of time, parliamentary time, very publicly, has been taken up trying to remove the bishop's vote from LegCo and Tim Wald. It's brought about comments from the Archbishop of York, which suggested that if this happened, the Isle of Man might eventually lose its diocese altogether. Many people saying, actually, we've got potholes, we've got all this. The government doesn't do anything, but it spends all its time talking about the bishop's vote. Now, when the Minister of Education introduced a new bill, which, amongst other things, would remove the need for religious education to be holy or mainly Christian, you spoke for over 40 minutes in the Keys opposing this. Now, surely that opens the way for, you know, 1,000 years of Christian tradition to be brought to an end on the island. With your position on the bishop's vote, surely that's at odds with your objection to the Christian teaching in Ireland schools?
No, not at all. I mean, I've actually got no issue at all with the Christian teaching in the school. I think the RE syllabus that we have is pretty good, actually. I know that the one school that my kids at, they went on a walking tour around one of the local churches a couple of months ago. It seems to be quite healthy, actually. And the issue with the bishop being in Tynwald was never about a religion issue. It's about being unelected. It's the issue I have with all MLCs, actually, is that I think if you are going to be making decisions on laws that affect everybody, you should be accountable to the people that you're affecting with those laws. It's that simple. So I would quite happily replace all of the MLCs with elected members. That's where I would go. There's a difference, though, between government time and parliamentary time. In parliamentary time, actually, we can sit for a lot longer than we actually do sit. Most House of Keys sittings are finished by lunchtime, give or take. We could sit all day. We used to, in fact, in the last administration. There used to be a lot of legislation coming through. We used to have very long sittings. We haven't really had that this time around. I suppose that the point I'm making is we didn't lose anything by focusing on other issues that were non-governmental.
But surely your time taken, was it? If you look back at your manifesto, the number one thing that people were not crying out for at the last election was remove the bishop's vote. And it seems to be one that has taken up a huge amount of time when I can go through the number of things in your manifesto that weren't delivered. And you sit there going, where were your priorities in terms of what was something that you and maybe your party felt important and representing the constituents of the island?
So I would like you to go through my manifesto and tell me what wasn't delivered.
I've done that myself, actually. Statutory sick pay?
Yeah, absolutely. Statutory sick pay is something I'm really keen on. I've brought motions about that. I've argued for that in Tynwald. The fact that I can't convince all of my colleagues it's the right way to go is a different kettle of fish. But we have made a lot of progress on employment rights. We've made a lot of progress on extending parental leave, shared parental leave for people who've moved into sending adoption leave now exists. I brought a motion around extending parental leave to self-employed people. So actually a lot of movement has been made on those employment rights. The next step, I think, has to be logically now statutory sick pay. Switching the system of sick allowances that we have to a system of statutory sick pay will be a massive step forward. It would be good for employers, good for employees, something I'm still very keen on. Again, it's something I've argued for. It's one of the few things in there that I haven't actually managed to achieve. And partly that's because you need to bring everybody with you. And trying to do anything in this space without the support of government is always quite difficult.
I think one of the things is going to be on voters' lips at this election, based on the record of the last administration. You know, it was quite embarrassing having only seven acts promulgated at Tynwald, is that delivery rather than simply discussed, consulted or begun. So I go through the manifesto promises of statutory sick pay, childcare tax relief, housing first, work hubs and a community hub in Ramsey, rates reform, major welfare reform. You know, is it a case that you are better at writing manifestos than implementing them?
Well, on the childcare tax credit, it's been quite interesting because the government took an alternative route on that. They went through expanding the childcare voucher scheme, which is definitely an option. I still personally think both of those schemes work very well together. But as you know, tax reform is something government is very, very nervous about. I brought a number of motions around that over the last 2 years, and every single one of them has been opposed by the government. It's the same with most things. Rates reform, again, there was an attempt to reform the rate system. We actually had a bill coming through, and the very last bill that was coming through the House was supposed to be about rates reform. And to that bill, I tabled a number of amendments, one of them very specifically being around a rates escalator for dilapidated property. So your property is empty, the longer it's empty, the more we charge you. That was all going through, being opposed by the government, and then the government decided to pull the bill. Well, ultimately, you can only work with the tools you've got, and I think that's one of the frustrations that I think a lot of people will have. And I think you're right, there's been a lot of talk over the last 5 years. I would like to say, though, that I think there's also been quite a lot of stuff done. In the first couple of years of the administration, I do think we started to make a lot of quite meaningful progress on a lot of different issues. We made real progress on things like the CAMHS waiting lists. We made progress on restoration and recovery. They made progress on developing better governance in the health system and getting more financial control over things.
Is this what voters asked you for at the last election on the doorstep? Because you say you get a lot of stuff done. Outside of the Tynwald bubble, people are sitting there going, our lives have not improved, and we know the external factors. Yeah. But things like 2021, you promised patients would wait no longer than 18 weeks from a GP referral to treatment. Okay, and you know, 4 to 5 years later, waiting lists are still a big thing. You know, could you have done more?
I don't think so. And I think that's the horrible truth of some of this. I was quite clear in my manifesto. I set out a number of things I'd like to achieve. They were aims. You can't make promises, really, as a politician on the Isle of Man, because we don't have party politics. You can't get in with a majority and say, well, I promised I would do this, so I'm going to do it. All you can say is, if you elect me, I will try and do these things. We actually managed to bring a 52-week target in for waiting lists, which was a step forward from where things were. Getting to an 18-week, I think, has definitely got to be the ambition, because that's where they are in the UK with what they call a referral to treatment time. That's where we need to be. It's still a long-term aim. It's still definitely the goal. And I think that's the only thing that you can really do as a politician over here, is to set out the vision of the island you want to see, and to tell people these are the things you're going to work towards. And as to your challenge about, are these things that people asked for on the doorstep? Categorically, yes, they absolutely were. People wanted you to try and tackle waiting lists. They wanted to try and improve the health service, to stop money being wasted on things that in their view, shouldn't be getting spent. It's a massively complex beast. And I get the feeling, and I really appreciate that when you look back over 5 years, it is very hard to say, am I in a better position today than I was 5 years ago? And the reason for that isn't just because of what government has or hasn't done. It is a lot of those external factors. I mean, in the last administration, we dealt with Brexit, we dealt with COVID. And then in this administration, we still were dealing with COVID. And we're now dealing through yet another energy crisis, yet another cost of living problems. And they're not simple problems that will be resolved overnight. Some of these things will take a very long time to turn the ship. And I think that's one of the things that I would say about the next 5 years. And I've just sent a leaflet out to people in Ramsey. And one of the things that I'm quite worried about for the next term is actually that the government starts to lose the focus on these long-term problems. And they try and look for quick fixes, try and look for easy wins, try and look for the short-term solution, because that's what people demand. They want action now. And I get the want for that. But sometimes doing something now isn't the right answer. Sometimes it will take a number of years to steer the ship, to turn the health service around, to sort out our financial problems, whatever it may be. There are no easy solutions. If there were easy answers, you can bet your bottom dollar politicians would have done them by now. Politicians love easy answers. They don't exist. And I think we have to accept that things will not move as fast or as far as we want them to. So what we need to make sure our politicians are doing is pushing, is keeping on, making sure things are moving forward. And one of the risks that you run in politics, as in a lot of aspects of life, is when you decide, well, this isn't perfect. This isn't going to help everybody. So I'm not going to do anything just yet. And I think that's where you've definitely seen that over the last year, I would say probably over the last 2 years with this particular government, is rather than make decisions to move things forward, they've got wound up in the detail going, well, this isn't going to help everybody, this isn't perfect, and so nothing's happened. So we've just seen a report on brownfield sites telling us that it's more expensive to build things on the Isle of Man. Well, of course it is. We all know this. What's your solution to that? We're going to keep thinking about this. That's not a solution. We knew this was a problem 5 years ago. We knew this was a problem 10 years ago. This isn't new information. But instead of coming forward and saying, we know this to be the case, this is what we're going to do, they say, here's some data, we'll think about it a bit more. And I think that's a real problem, is politicians being too afraid of social media noise or of upsetting the wrong people in the community. They're too afraid to actually make decisions and then stick with them. I didn't get everything right in my time as a minister. I'm not going to get everything right in the next 5 years. Anyone who claims they will is just a fool. But you have to be willing to make decisions for the right reasons. And then when challenged by people like yourself, stand up and go, actually, this is why I did that. And if you agree with me, great. You may not agree with me. That's fine too. But if you've got politicians who aren't even willing to do that, we're in real trouble.
We're going to skip through a few different topics here because we are going to run short of time. When you resigned as health minister, you claimed the government was steering healthcare towards privatisation, yet the chief minister publicly said that it wasn't true. Looking back, do you accept you possibly overstated the situation? Can you point to one specific policy decision that proves that your warning was justified?
I think that when I resigned, I was very clear as to why I did that. And I was in the room. I know what was discussed. So I know what was going on. And I know the direction of travel that we were being pushed down. And I wasn't happy with that. I think that by resigning and calling it out publicly, it almost put the brakes on that, because the government certainly weren't ready to have those conversations. And a number of things that were scheduled to happen actually have not happened. And you'll see that when you look back through the various department plans and island plans, things that the government had said they were going to do, they haven't done. And I think that in itself is quite telling. Stuff where they would have been sort of looking to charge more for certain services, that hasn't happened. Why? Well, the government will give you lots of reasons, but in large part, I think that when I resigned and I called some of this out, it did kind of force an almost break in some of that thinking. And in fairness to the new minister, I think she has done a pretty good job picking up and running with the things that we were doing already. And I think I said this to somebody quite recently in a conversation on Facebook. One of the things that I am quite happy with, actually, is I know that when I was in charge of the health service, we were pushing things in the right direction, moving in the right way. And I'm confident that's the case, because even when you've got a minister who is very different politically than I am, very different political views, it's still progressing with the same plans, the same issues, same challenges, same solutions. Actually, that gives you some confidence that you must have been on the right track, that even if someone who may disagree with you politically on a lot of things is still saying, actually, this is still the right way to go, it gives me some confidence that we were moving in the right direction.
In terms of the question that we're pretty much going to ask every candidate, the Morvannin offshore wind farm, obviously it'll be visible from your constituency. For or against?
So I'm very clear, I'm not going to be able to make a statement for or against, because the risk that you run, it's a statutory process, like the planning process. And in this context, the council of ministers will have to make a decision. They could appoint anyone to be part of that decision, not just ministers. And so any candidate who gets elected could find themselves being asked to sit on a panel to make a decision about this.
But we do have a record from, you know, when you were instructed by DEFA to have delegated powers in terms of the planning issue concerning the telegraph poles. You had emailed a constituent, of which got a copy, stating your opinion on telegraph poles, and then you were allowed to make a decision on reversing that planning. Why is this different?
Because you can have a general opinion about wind farms. So my position on wind farms generally is I think we do need more energy security on the island. We spend something in the region of £50 million a year buying gas for the power plant. Now, that's a lot of money. Imagine what you could do with £50 million a year if you didn't have to buy all that gas. And the reality is that gas price is not set locally, it's set nationally, internationally. And even if we were extracting our own gas, that price would be set internationally. So we're spending a lot of money buying from insecure nations, buying this gas. The reality is we need more energy security. So wind farms could very well be part of that solution. They're sustainable, they're friendly, all the rest of it. The question that is needing to be answered, I think, by the MEMA process around Morvannin is this the right development in the right location? That's the question. Not whether, in general, are wind farms good or bad. And that's the question that I think we can't answer. If you want to have a long discussion about wind farms in general, I can do that. I'm happy to. But if you want me to ask, is this the right development in the right location? That's what the independent panel is there to make a recommendation on. And what will happen is they will make a recommendation that will go to either the council ministers or people appointed by Comin to make that decision. That has to be impartial. That has to be a planning decision made for the relevant planning reasons in the law. After that, it goes to Tynwald. Now, after the council ministers or whoever has made that recommendation, that's the point where anyone is free to say whatever they like, because Tynwald is ultimately the final decision maker, and Tynwald members can vote whichever way they like for whatever reason they like. And that's the point where people will be able to quite openly say whether they are for or against this particular proposal, and they'll be able to make that decision having had all the evidence in front of them, whether the impact on tourism and fishing and the marine ecosystem and all the rest of it, is that going to be a positive or a negative for the island? They'll also have to weigh up the financial aspects of the deal. This is where I think there'll be real issues, because the government hasn't really been particularly forthcoming about what the financial aspects look like. Now, I don't think that's a planning matter. I think that's a matter for Tynwald, because even if the recommendation from this particular committee is we should go ahead and build this, it's the right thing to build in this location, actually, the next question is, okay, but is it a good deal for the island? Because it might be, like any planning decision, it could be that in planning terms, it's absolutely fine to put a house there. Right, but is someone going to buy it? And if the answer to that is no, if the answer is, look, it's the right location, it's the right development, but it still isn't a good deal for the island, Tynwald, I think, is still well within its rights to say, thanks very much, but it's not for us. And you'll only know that when the government has published all that information about the finances and when you have that recommendation from the committee.
Now, we're running out of time, Mr. Hooper, so thank you very much for your time today. You have 1 minute now to effectively tell the constituents of Ramsey your message to them as to why you feel you've earned another 5 years of their trust.
So I don't think a minute is really long enough to tell you anything meaningful. So I would say, look at the manifesto, look at the leaflets, come and talk to me. That's the answer. I will say that there are no easy answers. I've said this earlier, I'll say it again. There are no easy answers. And the biggest risk that you face, I think, with the next 5 years in particular, is politicians going in on promises of making quick fixes and short-term solutions, things which actually will be quite damaging to the island in the long term. So you need to balance that with an element of that experience of some stability, is what I'd be getting at. My approach has always been to just do things, try things, see what happens, see if we can make it work, see if it doesn't, because I've always believed in doing what you can, in helping the people that you can help. And that's the message that I'll give out to people, is I will keep trying my absolute best, I'll keep working hard, and ultimately, hopefully, I'll do the things that you are supportive of. But if not, you know, I'm very accessible, pick up the phone, send me a message, I'll always do my best.
That was Laurie Hooper, who's standing for election in Ramsey. Also standing in the constituency are Robert Cowell, Ewan McGuinness and Janine Shimmin. This interview, along with all the others recorded as part of this series, will be available shortly after broadcast from your usual podcast provider. And don't forget to head to manxradio.com, where you can find everything you need to know about the general election on our dedicated website.